You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of May 2nd, 2017, and episode number 312. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. You remember a couple of weeks ago, and I guess it's been, 3 months now, we celebrated number 300. Well, I was excited about that, but 312 is the number I was looking for. Because 312, if you do the math, 52 weeks, you divide 312 by 52, carry this 4, 2, 3. It's 6 years. So it's kind of like 6 years worth of episodes that I've done, even though the first 2 years I did this show way back in 2008, they were monthly shows. And so I did 2 years of monthly shows before these weekly shows. And I missed some weeks, some months here and there. And I've missed three shows in the last 2 years because of cruises. But I don't know. It's kind of a weird personal milestone. 312 is kind of a weird number. But anyway, speaking of 300, I didn't know this. I thought that this particular show had like 800 episodes at this point. He's not in the chat room, but I want to congratulate Jim Mallard from the Mallard Report, who celebrated 300 episodes last week, last Wednesday. I could have swore he was like at least double that. He's been on forever, it seems like. But congratulations, Jim, if you're listening in on the archive. 300, big number. Anyway, tonight, we've got a lot of stuff. I got to get started here. No time for messing around. This week's news includes an update on the Thylacine Project, a warning on viral social media posts. Yeah, we're going to talk about that stuff again. You guys are worrying me out there, and I'm going to clear something up for you tonight. Tracking the Owlman. We talked about that last week, but now we have a little bit more information on this particular story. The Yowie. Yeah, the Yowie. We haven't talked about him in a while, but something, a story has stirred up the public out in Australia. Speaking of Australia, black cat on the loose. And while some are searching for it, some just aren't buying it. Well, one guy's trying to buy it. And a new UFO reference book released. And we'll also tonight going to have the MUFON sighting statistics, which goes along with the UFO reference book. Kind of neat. Everything is going to flow tonight. It's going to be really interesting. And we're also going to go inside the mind of conspiracy theorists. So put on your tinfoil hats for that story. It's going to be quite interesting. And this week's news is brought to you by Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuniversity.org. Don't do it now. Wait till the end of the show. Write it down. All right. Well, we have quite a bit of I got these different segments all laid out here. And the first one here is we talk about this every week, the events listing. And I just realized now before I started talking that I've not updated the list since last week, I think the week before. So I'm a little behind, so don't check the listings. It's not up to date. But if you have any event that you want to have on the website, paranewsinsider.com, and want me to talk about here during the Paranormal News Insider, let me know. if you still use email. Some people don't. Insider@paranewsinsider.com, or you can contact me through social media, Facebook, Twitter, or I also have this contact form on paranewsinsider.com. And it's almost sad in a way, because this is it. This is the last week. That's it. It's over. It's the last week that I get to promo the 2017 PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Yes. It takes place this Friday. It's on already. I can't believe it. It's here already. Eric Altman has done a wonderful job putting this together. That's an understatement. It's definitely the event of a lifetime. And if you're not going to make it, you are going to miss out. This is we had a dry run last year. I shouldn't say dry run because it was kind of wet, but we had an awesome event last year, and this event this year is looking to be even better than last year. I don't know how that's possible, but it looks like it's going to be. I'm excited. And on Facebook, he put out this post, and I'm going to read this verbatim. Bring rain gear, which I've already got loaded up, ready to go. Camping chairs, and bring an open mind. We look forward to seeing everyone May 5th, 6th, and 7th at Benner's Meadow Run Campground, which is at 315 Nelson Road in Farmington, Fayette County, Pennsylvania. We'll be working hard to entertain, educate, and raise money for Unity, a Journey of Hope, Lucky Paws Animal Rescue, and Fayette Friends of Animals. Speakers include Stan Gordon, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, David Weatherly, Dave Spinks, Sean Austin, Steve Coles, Brian D. Parsons, Jay Baterton, John G. Sable Jr., and Ronald Murphy. It's weird talking about myself in third person. Special guests from the Ames team and the TV show Mountain Monsters, Huckleberry, Jeff Headley, Wild Bill, and Willie McQuillan. Harry A. Metz, a.k.a. Scary Harry, and the Spooky Spectre. Lon Strickler, Butch Witkowski, the Mountain Gypsies, Kathy Young, and Tarasi Lee Hughes, along with Mamie Hilton from One Bizarre Podcast, Katie Hart, and Blackie O. The Society of the Supernatural, workshop presenters Tom Ferentz and Jimmy Trick, and Diane DeBaldo, Trick of Goosebumps Paranormal. I got a hiking stick from them last year, bringing it again this year. Live music from the music man, Walter Schrum. Walter Schrum, that was very entertaining last year. Movies, Saturday Night from Small Town Monsters, Seth Breedlove, and filmmaker Alexander Petikov. Over 30 vendors at the event, including Wish for Giants, Geeks and Ghosts. Oh, Geeks and Ghosts, they're going to be there. Aromatherapy by Michelle Taylor. Now, Geeks and Ghosts, let me go back to that. Never mind, we'll keep going. Get your photo taken with Bigfoot. Yeah, Bigfoot. I already got my photo with Yeti last year. It was Sasquatch, his cousin. Of doitthere.net and so many more. There will be a day high time outings on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. A Bigfoot cookout. Movies shown. Should be reading this right off of Facebook. There will be a meet and greet pizza party and a town hall meeting where you can share your Bigfoot stories. That's going to take place Friday night. I'll be getting in town just for that. A charity auction and much more. The charity auction is worth its weight. We had so much fun yelling and screaming at each other, outbidding each other. It was a lot of fun. The entire weekend is benefiting three local churches, which I already mentioned up before. Okay. So come out and join us this weekend, May 5th, 6th, and 7th at Benner's Meadow Run Campground for the 2017 PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Online tickets they're over. They ended last night. And there will be plenty of tickets available at the door. Well, there's no door. It's outside at the table. There'll be a little table set up. You'll see it when you get into the campground. There's a little lake there. There's a little what the heck is that thing called? A little picture there. And big field. And you'll see it. You'll see the tent. You'll see all the everything set up, ready to go. Oh man, hopefully it's not going to be too wet. Now, if you're interested in going, all the directions, all the information, pricing, and everything is available at pabigfootcampingadventure.com. You can get directions. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. but that's great because that's, you know, kind of where Bigfoot hangs out. So join us this weekend, rain or shine, for the adventure of a lifetime. The PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It will be intense. Well, I'll be intense. I got mine packed, ready to go. So I'll do, I don't know, maybe I'll do a little wrap up of that next week. I don't know. More than likely, I'll be excited. So also, May 19th through the 20th, that's coming up, that's a little over 2 weeks. St. Albans Sanatorium in Radford, Virginia is holding EnigmaCons. EnigmaCons. A lot of great people there. Unfortunately, one of them dropped out, but I'm still going. I'll be there. A big thanks to Alan May, who's helping put on this thing. He's a great, great guy. Sent me a couple of baseball hats. Scott Sukel, formerly of Mansfield Reformatory, another awesome guy. It's going to be weird seeing him outside of the reformatory, really. Christopher St. Booth will be there. Adam Bonnet, Pat Bussard O'Keefe, Susan Switek, and Alan Marston. It's going to be a really interesting event. Very different from the normal stuff. The normal stuff. Not that I don't like normal. I like abnormal. I like paranormal, too, but I like just different things. Like the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Totally different than anything you're going to find. There are, well, there's at least one, thing that's trying to, pretend like they're doing the same thing, but it's not. It's not the same thing. Don't be fooled by imitations. And let's see, one other thing here. Monday, May 15th, 7 to 9 p.m., Brandon Masullo of hauntedtheories.com will be presenting some information on environmental sensitivity and paranormal experiences in Columbus, Ohio. I talked about all this stuff, all his work on environmental sensitivity, right here on the show before, and it's billed as what he says on this is, do you have longstanding allergies, chronic pain and fatigue, migraines, or sensitivity to lights, sounds, and smells? Do you have more paranormal and apparitional experiences than the average person? An environmental sensitivity, which is being affected by the surrounding environment to a higher degree than the normal population, may be a factor in such experiences. Several parapsychological studies in the past 10 years have provided significant correlations between environmental sensitivity and paranormal experiences. And Brandon has done some awesome work in this particular area, which includes actual published material, which again, I've shown here on the show. Well, not shown it, but well, I guess I did in the chat room and through social media. But I talked about it here. Again, that's Monday, May 15th, and that's from 7 to 9 p.m. in Columbus, Ohio, at the Upstairs Art Space at 4601 North High Street. The talk is free and are gratefully accepted. And I've shared that information through Facebook last week, and I'll try to remember to do that again this week as well as following week. That's when it happens. So we'll get that information out to you guys. Again, if you're interested, I don't know how many people are in Columbus listening to the show. Hopefully a few, because I do make my rounds down there every now and again. And before we hit the news, I have some what I call baffling briefs. And these are some stories that not a whole lot of effort's been put into to really dig through it, or some updates to some previous stories. And I have an update on the Thylacine Hair Project. Sounds kind of weird. We talked about this last week from Chris Rayberg. Now, the key goal of this particular project is to deliver high-resolution digital imagery of thylacine hair using light microscopy to produce photomicrographs. That's fancy terms for really cool pictures of close-ups of thylacine hair. That's really all you had to say. I talked about this last week again, how Chris was able to come by some of these samples. Kind of a weird kind of story, but anyway, he has this thylacine hair, and he realized that there's only two studies that have been conducted on similar hair types. And unfortunately, one sample in 1950 produced crude drawings, and another in 1985 produced black and white photographs. So Chris's work will produce the best comparison data for thylacine hair ever. and will provide the information to professionals and amateurs alike. And this will help aid in the identification of potential evidence. And for me, I think it's as well as be able to thwart would-be hoaxes of thylacine fur, because it's just a matter of time before somebody says, "Oh, I got thylacine hair. It's real." Well, we can thwart that. Now, Chris needs your help. Of the $1,795 he needs to fund this project, he's only collected $733 with just 5 days left in his campaign. So anything you can do to help him would certainly help this this experiment come to fruition. Now, I donated right before the show last week, since I definitely feel this is really worth the investment. I think it's a great thing because, I mean, yeah, it's not going to prove anything, but just in case somebody does find thylacine hair samples, now we actually have, well, we'll hopefully actually have something to compare that to, which right now we don't really have much to go on. And it kind of scares me a little bit because if somebody just kind of comes up with something and says, "I found thylacine hair," it's going to be kind of hard to disprove that if you don't have the stuff to back it up with. So this is a worthwhile investment. Science may not make sense in the beginning. You don't always get something glamorous to begin with, but this down the road could really, really turn out to be a wonderful thing. Another way documenting extinct species, any sign that we can of these creatures, I think it's worth it for science. Now, Chris was kind enough to email me last week after I donated, and he was also happy that this news reached the Paranormal News Insider, and I was here able to talk about it right here on the show. So it's on experiment.com, and I'm going to throw this link in the chat room once again in case you didn't see it last week. And hopefully I'll remember again to post that information through Facebook when I do all my story updates during the week. If you're live, I'll send that information out during the week. And one little word of warning here. I know everyone's doing this. Everybody does it. But you should ask yourself, should I be doing it? And this is another story here. And it doesn't really have anything to do with the paranormal, but it kind of concerns me because this is I saw a couple people I know doing this, and I instant messaged them right away. And I said, "You probably want to take that down, and here's why." And that's like one thing that really annoys me on Facebook. I mean, there's a lot of things that annoy me on Facebook, but we'll just keep it to one. It's when people tell people to post things or copy paste information to a particular post. You know, how many of my friends are really friends or whatever. I don't like that kind of stuff. It just kind of it's annoying, and I'll never do it, no matter how cool or no matter what it is. I'll never do it. It's nothing short of spam, really, to me. I just don't see it any other way. Now, many people must be bored with their social media, tweeting posts that force people to give out personal information. I don't know. It might be cute and informative to some, but downright dangerous for others. Now, one thing I've read recently was a post on why many people are against or afraid to put their personal pictures up on the internet for a list of reasons. Complain and say that they're worried about this and they're worried about that. But what's weird is some of these same people will freely put up pictures of not only their babies, but their kids as well. I mean, do they get their permission? Probably not. And why is it not right to post your picture, but perfectly fine to use theirs as your profile picture? Kind of weird. Well, anyway, not to get sidetracked, but I'm specifically talking about the latest raging Facebook game of posting in concerts. You've probably seen this. A lot of people are doing it. It's kind of annoying, really. But with this list of 10, if you haven't seen this, there are 9 that you've been to and 1 that is a lie. That's how I've read it. But these posts generally end up discussing all of this information, including which one was your favorite. Now, let me ask you this. Would you post the name of your first car? Maybe. What about your first kiss? Who you first kissed? Well, maybe. I don't know. No big deal, right? Seems harmless. What about the name of your first pet? The name of your childhood friend? What about the first school you attended? Now, all these questions, they seem pretty innocent, but these are typical questions that are asked for password recovery on just about any website, from banks to websites or anything else that requires a username and password combination. Or the hospital you were born. I mean, the things go on. It goes on and on. Now, many experts have jumped on this craze, warning people not to openly discuss this due to potential security, personal security leaks, as this may divulge an answer to a security question. I have to say, though, of the dozens of websites that I have security questions for, and I'm not going to go into how I keep track of all this. Mine's not on my computer, by the way, so you can hack all you want. I don't have any of these security questions that ask for my first or my favorite concert. But that doesn't mean that some of you don't or won't or have that, or I won't have that in the future. But the real lesson here is be careful of what personal information you provide online, as you never know who is watching or what they might use that information for. Now, some people wonder, I was asked during a kind of a discussion about this, when I've proved my point to a particular person, and he said, well, do you think like these people are putting this information out there? Well, it didn't take long for me to do research. And this viral question about the concerts is said to have started as a way down to cut down on the negativity which is circulating on social media. Well, it's always been there. A guy named Tommy Casarino, who's a radio DJ in the Rochester, New York area, says he's the one that started it. And he certainly did not think of the security question issue. He had good reasons for doing it, I guess, and didn't really think it was a bad thing. Now, many security questions fall into certain categories. One is the childhood category, which would ask you, like, your first friend. You also have the favorites category, which would be what's your favorite movie or favorite television show. Historical favorites, which would be your favorite as a child. The family category, where did your parents meet, would be a typical question. Firsts is also a category. Your first school would be a prime example of that. Personal characteristics, which would include what hospital were you born in, what was your first concert, would be another one that would fit in. Education, which would include name the elementary school you attended as a child. And work is another thing, which is would include what town was your first job in. Now, when I first started, I mean, I've been on the internet since pretty much since it started. I mean, I was on chat networks before the world was even born. Cleveland Freenet was something that I partook in way back in the early 1990s. I was DY070. So I was one of the early people on the Cleveland Freenet project, which was a pretty cool thing if you've never heard of it. It cost me a stamp. That was it back in the day. I don't even know how much stamps were back then. But all you did was you went on the computer and you signed up for a thing. They gave you the login thing, and you created a password, and you sent this little thing in the mail, and they activated your account, and it was free. I talked to people all over the world, and a good friend of mine went to Texas A&M, and he and I were able to talk all night long for free. Basically, it just cost the stamp and having to call different numbers. There were five different numbers. But anyway, that's ancient history. I mean, it's so much different now. But we didn't have security questions back then. I don't remember when security questions started, but I realized pretty early that you didn't have to be truthful with this stuff. I was worried sometimes, like with my bank, that I had to be, but I realized they don't really know either way. So you can kind of pretty much make up whatever you want. Now in the USA Today article, I was kind of amazed to hear that same advice. I was like, wow, I guess I'm not the only one that thinks that. It says there that you can answer your favorite color as polka dot, because people might pick up on that. It's a pretty easy one. You know, women like pink and orange and bright colors, yellow maybe. Men like black and, I don't know, green, blue, I don't know. Your mother's maiden name, make it thermostat. Maybe your, I don't know, maybe your mother's maiden name really is thermostat. That'd be weird, wouldn't it? Now, if you follow this advice, it will never matter what information that you actually put out about yourself. It won't matter what you say. It won't matter what people know. Not to mention, if you keep all of this information off of the internet, like I do, and store it in a safe location, like I do, and use a variety of usernames and passwords, like I do, and avoid using simple password combinations or actual words, like I do, you'll have no problem. But beware what kind of games you're playing on Facebook. I guess that's all I had to say. So that being said, let me throw that link in there if you're wanting to read that about the internet security stuff. Boom. Throw that in the chat room there. And one last thing I want to mention here before we jump into the news. Owlman. Remember last week talked about the Owlman? Were you here? I don't think you were. Owlman sightings. Last week, Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters really got his finger on the pulse of this story happening in Chicago, Illinois. Well, he's created and shared a map, which is awesome. It was on Google Plus, and it shows 8 distinct Mothman-like sightings of this particular Owlman in the Chicago, Illinois, dating back from 2011 to the present. Now, last week, I have some distances and locations during my report of the story, but I really like this map. It's plain and simple, but it really gives you the feel for how this thing is taking place. And let me post that also in the chat room. This is an interesting, evolving story right now, and we'll have to keep an ear and an eye out for this to see if it's going to evolve. Now, personally, I think that this is up to some kind of big hoax, but I don't know. I could be wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong and something interesting is going to happen. Other people are fearful that this could lead to a big disaster, similar to the Mothman sightings. And last but not least, the last baffling brief, the Loch Ness Monster is still missing. Non-decrypted news. So we're going to go to Australia, down under. We've got a trio of stories here in encrypted news from Australia, and we're going to talk about the Yowie. We haven't really talked about the Yowie all that much in recent weeks here on the show, but the Yowie, which is the Australian comparison to the Bigfoot, this is also rooted in folklore, but this being Aboriginal folklore, just as Bigfoot is with Native American folklore. Now, an article published on April 17th of this year in Eden Magnet from the city of Eden, which is south of Sydney and east of Melbourne, spelled Melbourne, but they say Melbourne, in the southern area of the state of New South Wales. The article outlined the gorillas of Eden and included a new book called The Yowie, In Search of Australia's Bigfoot by Paul Cropper and Tony Healy. You have to say it that way. The Yowie, In Search of Australia's Bigfoot. It has to be pronounced that way. It's actually part of the font. Anyway, this article prompted many to contact the Eden Magnet about their own personal stories dealing with the gorillas of Eden, or simply the Yowie. Many people see the Yowie as misidentification, as simply a part of folklore, or just a hoax, or possibly a combination of all this. The story simply blew up on social media. People were really talking about this and sent in a lot of information, a lot of stories, granted a lot, again, historical, 20 years or older. But Cropper responded to a lot of these claims. And again, a lot of them were pretty old stuff. But still, it was interesting to see that a lot of locals had stories about the Yowie. Now, this also comes on the heels of another story which has Australians in this particular area talking about a potential large cat on the loose, which is our second story of the week. Conveniently enough, ties right into each other. So there's the EdenMagnet.com story. And the, let's see, this paw print. I don't know if you've seen this paw print picture. When I saw it, immediately, when I saw it, it looked like a mountain lion to me. I've seen enough mountain lion tracks in books and drawings. I have my own casts of mountain lions. So I'm pretty familiar with them, and it looks very similar to that. Now, a guy named Vaughn King of the Australian Big Cat Research Group has worked at the Steve Irwin's Australia Zoo and is pretty familiar with large cats. But he's in on the middle of this story. But first, I'm getting carried away here because I need to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, in case you were here last night, Eric Altman was supposed to be the guest on CryptoKid Radio, and unfortunately, it didn't quite work out. Some issues with the show. Really stinks. Eric is a great guy, and looking forward to that show. Well, I'll see him Friday, but see him all weekend. Be hanging out with Eric all weekend. I don't know. Maybe I'll get him to record something real quick, and we'll put it on my thing. I don't know. No promises. But anyway, catch CryptoKid every Monday night right here on WCJVRadio.com, Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern. He can't stay up late. He's young. He's got to go to bed like me. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night, you can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson. She's going to be talking to Douglas Robinson. Douglas Robinson, vampire expert and author. That sounds like an interesting show. Again, that's Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson tomorrow night. And that will be at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, Wednesday night. Again, right here on WCJVRadio.com. It's 2 minutes late. It's not that bad. So anyway, back to Vaughn King. Sounds like a baseball player. He's pretty familiar with large cats. He worked at the Steve Irwin's Australian Zoo. And pretty familiar with these large cats. He did some work with Bengal tigers and different things. Now, a visitor to the Sublime Point Park near Austinmer, New South Wales, prompted a lot of speculation as they found a print. Cat print. Right there in the ground. Now, this story has been floating around for quite a while. People have been talking about this purported black cat creeping around the area. And somebody finally has a print. And it seems like this is proof. Here it is. There's a print. There's something physical now. People have seen this, but no one's ever gotten proof. Now, Austinmer is 407 kilometers north of Eden, which is like, I don't know, 250-something to you and I, miles. Now, from the story I just mentioned, it's really no relevance to this story, so I don't even know why I'm mentioning that. But what about the paw print? Vaughn King feels that this is the rear paw of a leopard. And if I remember the image, I'm trying to remember it in my mind. I think it's a left rear, if I'm correct. Now, the image of the track shows an 8-centimeter Bic lighter sitting next to the paw print. Very good. You're supposed to do that. Which the 8 centimeters translates to 3.15 inches in height, which would make it within the range of a leopard or similar large cat. A little bit too big. It sounds small. 3 inches doesn't seem very big. But trust me, that's not a house cat. It's pretty big. Now, King is confident that this would be much too large to be a feral cat, which is what I just said, which many other people are actually speculating it is. It's just misidentification. A majority of people think that. Now, the Austinmer Panther or Illawarra Black Panther, named for the region, Illawarra, has been in the news for years, like I said, and it's been seen by many. And it's been described pretty similar in each account. A large black cat, the long sweeping tail, and sometimes they mention bright yellow eyes, which would really fit in. Now, this would certainly not be a feral cat, in my opinion. Judging from the thick jungle of the Sublime Point Track area where the sightings have occurred, I wouldn't say it's impossible. It's not impossible that a released or escaped jungle cat has been able to survive there for a number of years. But could it And is it a leopard or other big cat? Now, King feels that this is an Asiatic leopard due to the fact that melanistic gene, which means it's black in appearance, is stronger in Asian leopards than the African ones. King is spending a year in search of this cat and has left his paid job. And his wife, who is a lawyer, well, she's left to be bringing home the bacon. Now, there's a chance that King can somehow maybe profit from this if he finds this leopard, which ties into our third story of the week, which I'll talk about here in a second as I get this blah, blah, blahsies. Boom. And third story. Wollongong counselor Beattie Krasnich has heard the talk of the Black Panther roaming the woods of eastern Australia, but he's not sold on the idea that it's real. Thinks it's misidentification. Well, he says there are some pictures you'll see online which look convincing, but physical proof? If you want proof of kangaroos, you will find their bodies. If you want proof deer exist, you find their bodies. What is, I don't know. I didn't write this. I just copied and pasted it. What is, I don't know what that means. After 80 years of big cat sightings, we have not found a single bit of physical evidence. Unquote. Well, Krasnich has offered $5,000 to anyone who can capture this purported creature. He specifies that the cat must be captured alive and be unharmed, and it must also not be a feral cat. It's got to be the real deal. It's got to be a wild leopard or some other exotic cat. Despite the stories and photograph, Krasnich is not convinced and demands this physical proof. Now, there's a couple of theories in Australia as to what these, you know, in United Kingdom, they call them alien big cats or ABCs, you know, mystery cats. I don't know what they call them in Australia, but there's a couple of theories about these cats. Some think that they're wartime mascots from different periods that people would bring these things as mascots for the platoons. And they let them loose. Have fun, cat. Chasing the dingoes. Some also theorize that these could be escaped circus animals. Well, leopards, Black Panthers in the zoo? I don't know. Or, last but not least, just a fat house cat roaming in the woods. Well, you also have misidentification. But is there really a black cat on the loose? Regardless, if it's a feral cat or a real leopard or other exotic cat, is there really one out there? People are seeing something, but is it just their active imaginations? We don't know. I guess money may help. I don't know. But time is apparently going to help tell here. Time and apparently money will hopefully unfold this mystery. And we'll keep an eye out for this because this is it's going to speed up now. It's every couple of months. I've did some research on this. It's every few months a story pops up about this Black Panther. But now money's on the table. Tell you what, it's going to speed up. And that's your cryptid news for the week. All happening in Australia. Pretty weird three stories right in a row kind of feed off of each other. Now we're going to jump into UFO news. And I was kind of going back and forth on doing a book of the week here. But I had something picked out. But I thought, man, this news is just piling up. And then I caught this story about UFO sightings and this book written about UFO sightings. And I thought, you know what? I've never read this book, but it's now in my list on Amazon of books that that I want to buy. And I have a little notepad where I keep a list of books. I have like 35 books on this list. It's getting out of control. And I put this on the list. So this is going to be pretty much our book of the week this week, even though I haven't read it. Usually my books of the week are books that I've read and I can tell you have some sort of merit or value to the particular field in which it represents. But I've not read this, but I'm going to read this one way or the other. It's a little, I don't want to say expensive, but it's a little bit more than I'm willing to throw down for this book, which I have my own research into this stuff. But it'd be really cool to see what they've come up with here. And it's about UFO sightings. Now, are they on the increase or the decrease? I've heard both. Sometimes you read stories that say UFO stories have quadrupled in certain years, and others say that UFO sightings are on the decrease. Well, that's the question that this particular new book intends to answer, and it was recently released through CreateSpace. Now, the book is titled UFO Sightings Desk Reference, United States of America, 2001 to 2015, and obviously examines UFO sightings from 2001 through 2015. And it goes through the two largest UFO sighting gathering sites, the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, and the National UFO Reporting Center, or known as NUFORC. Now, I talk about the monthly sighting reports from MUFON right here each month, and I break things down by country and then by state. And what's exciting about this is Cheryl and Linda Miller Costa, who both authored this book, have put together a resource that not only breaks down to the state, but also to the county level as well, which that's awesome. I love research. Research is fun. Now, the book is essentially a breakdown of the statistics and information contained in the reports, and it's 374 pages of charts and graphs that focus on the location and timing of the incidents and the various shapes that the witnesses reported. Now, these are not just a couple of interested spectators that wrote this book. These are educated enthusiasts of UFO phenomena. Cheryl Costa is a military veteran, a retired information security professional from the aerospace industry, and holds a Bachelor's of Arts degree from the State University of New York at Empire State College in entertainment writing. Linda Miller Costa has a Bachelor of Arts in psychology from Case Western Reserve University, which is 20 miles away from where I'm at right now, and a library science master's from the University of Maryland. And after a career in scientific research and publishing in Washington, D.C., she is currently at Le Moyne College Library in Syracuse, New York. So this is an interesting book. And again, I want to get my hands on this. Just any kind of research, especially this much research. Throw the book in there and also throw the cover. It's kind of a weird cover. It's really plain. It's a reference book. It's not supposed to be flashy and neat. It's just white, plain old white. Plain old white. The little UFO drawn in there for good measure. UFO Sightings Desk Reference, United States of America, 2001 to 2015. Unidentified Flying Objects, Frequency, Distribution, and Shapes by Cheryl Costa and Linda Miller Costa. Well, that's kind of, I guess that's the book of the week. That's official. I don't have to read it, I guess. Pretty much every book up until now I've read, but I think this is worth it. This is a really good book on UFO sightings and referencing all this information compiled. And it's not about opinions. It's not about what we think UFOs are or where their secret bases are or what they're, if they're interdimensional or this or that, how they got here. No, it's the facts. It's based on the reports of people into these particular MUFON and NUFORC sighting gathering sites. And it's just put there for you to look at. And they compiled all this information and made graphs and things, which I really want to see all this. It sounds really exciting. But that essentially is your book of the week. Now, speaking of UFO statistics, we do have the MUFON sighting statistics this week, courtesy of MUFON field investigator Audrey Hamilton. Thank you again, Audrey, for boom, like every morning, it's like clockwork on the first, like right away, right? Like 7 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning, boom, there's that email. And then I have to wait like 14 days and I get the email from MUFON, which is weird. Like, I don't know. I just know, I guess I have to know the right people. Now, MUFON is the largest worldwide organization geared toward UFO research and investigation. To find out more about Mutual UFO Network, as well as maybe potentially, I don't know, becoming a UFO investigator yourself if you're interested in such a thing. It's exciting, and they train you pretty well. You got to buy this really expensive manual and take a very hard test, but it's worth it. You can find more information at MUFON.com. That's MUFON.com. And looking back at the UFO sighting statistics for March, I predicted 584 worldwide sightings. There ended up being only 478. Ouch. I predicted 412 sightings for the United States, and there ended up only being 328. Ouch. Not my best guess, not my best work. Well, this month I did a little bit better. My predictions for April were 520 for total worldwide reports and 359 for United States sightings. So in April of 2017, MUFON fielded 529 worldwide reports. Again, I guessed 520, and had 343 U.S. sightings. And I said 359. That's not bad. It's not too shabby. Now, the United Kingdom, they were second. They turned in 75 reports. That really falls off fast. Canada was next with 49. Then a sharp drop-off again to Colombia. Huge drop-off, all the way down to 9 reports. Australia and India turned in 6 reports each. And Italy with 4. Sweden, Ireland, and Costa Rica turned in 3 reports each. And 21 more countries turned in 2 or 1 report each, which included Europe, Asia, Africa, and South American countries, which is pretty cool. It is definitely worldwide that these reports are being funneled into MUFON from. A lot of these countries, they don't really focus on MUFON exclusively. A lot of these other countries, especially in South America, even North America and Mexico, they have their own reporting centers, their own ways of reporting this stuff, and their own investigators that investigate these things. So MUFON doesn't always get all of the UFO sightings. This is just a sample. But I really wish that everybody would, even if they investigate their own, if they'd still report it to MUFON, so at least all this stuff was going into one space, and it would make referencing a reference book even that much better. Now, as far as U.S. states, of the 343 sightings logged in, California led the way with 53. Again, no surprise there. California also leads the way in population, so they should be number one. And again, 53 sightings for California. Texas was second with just less than half of California with 26 sightings. And Florida was third with 23, followed by Michigan with 14. Arizona and New York turned in 13 reports each. Georgia and Pennsylvania turned in 11 reports. North Carolina and Ohio had 10 each. Nevada, Illinois, and Washington State turned in 9 reports each. Indiana, Virginia, and New Mexico with 8. Wisconsin had 7 and a boatload of cheese. Tennessee and Virginia had 6 reports each. Alabama, Missouri, Oklahoma, Oregon, and South Carolina had 5 reports each. And I just mentioned 24 states and a whole lot of cheese. Now, these 24 states that had 5 or more UFO reports. And there's another 26 states. Yeah, that's 50 if you do the math. So all 50 states turned in reports. Now, granted, some of them didn't really turn in that many. And there was no District of Columbia this month, but still impressive that 50 states turned in reports. Now, I do a little thing here that MUFON used to do. They don't do it anymore because it's kind of insignificant statistically, especially when there's not that many sightings. But they used to do a per capita breakdown. But I Yes, I do a per capita breakdown because I think it's important, even though we're talking percentages and it's very minuscule. What it does is it shows you what's significant versus not significant. Now, granted, none of this is really overly significant because there's no proof. There's no UFOs captured. And these sighting reports are just reported in these particular months. They may not have actually happened in this particular month. It might have happened. You might have had somebody who saw a UFO, let's say in March, but didn't report it until April. Maybe it happened the last day of March. Or maybe it happened 25 years ago and they just happened to report it in April of this year. So it's not a perfect science. They just kind of break it down by what hits the inbox for that particular month. But taking a look at per capita, which if you don't know what per capita is, essentially I take the number of reports in that particular state, divided by the population, according to the July 2014 U.S. Census estimate that was that took place. And once I divide all that, then I multiply by 100,000, and that gives me sightings per 100,000, which 100,000 is usually the that's usually what people use is the average for that. And it kind of gives you kind of an example of how many people in that particular grouping are seeing things. Now, in the case of UFO reports through MUFON, it's percentages. It's like arms and legs, essentially. It's like quarters of people. And if you look at the U.S. as a whole, again, there was 343 sightings. Yeah, 343 for the U.S. Now, if you do the per capita, which there's 318,857,056 people, according to July 2014. I'm sure it's much different right now, though. But just, you know, for estimate's sake, the per capita is 0.107. So that's 1/10 of a person out of 100,000 people. So it's like 1 in a million, essentially, saw, or I should say reported, a UFO in the United States. Now, California led the way with 53 reports, but looking at the per capita, since they have such a large population, it's 0.136, which is still above the U.S. average, which is interesting, but it's still insignificant, 0.136. Now, Montana, which is the 44th state in population, turned in 0.195 with two sightings. Arizona, which is the 15th populated state of the United States, had turned in a 0.193 with 13 sightings. Wyoming, which is dead last in a lot of things in population, with a 0.171 this month with their one sighting. Nebraska, which is 37th in population, finished with 0.159 with their three sightings. State of Maine, which is 41st in population, had a 0.150 with their two sightings. Michigan, which is 10th in population, finished with 0.141 with 14 sightings, and it goes downhill. North Dakota, which is the 47th state, only had one sighting. It turned in 0.135. Oklahoma, the 28th state in population, turned in a 0.129 with five. And let's see, Washington State, they're 13th in population, 0.129 with nine sightings. Then we get a little, let's look at some of the higher numbers here. The highest, we'll do the highest. Alaska, the 48th state in population, 0.406. So 40% of a person out of 100,000 people reported a UFO. So three reports for Alaska, kind of insignificant despite that big number. That's only three reports. Nevada, the 35th state in population, 0.317 with nine reports. New Mexico, 36th in population, right there behind Nevada, with 0.383, which is pretty good, with eight sightings. And I wasn't sure who this month's winner was. I mean, looking back, the biggest number I have looking back goes back to June of 2016, which was, I think that was the nearing the peak of the sightings historically for MUFON. Alaska turned in 0.68 back in June with 5 sightings. In July, Vermont turned in 0.64 with 4 sightings. Nevada turned in 0.53 with 15 sightings. Those are the big ones. But the biggest that I see to date, August 2016, Vermont, they had 7 sightings in August. That doesn't sound like much. But they turned in a 1.12. So 1 out of 100,000 people in Vermont turned in a report back in August 2016. So you can see it's kind of – it's pretty insignificant. But it still gives you an idea. You know, one state may have turned in 5, another turned in 3. But you can see the difference based on the population size of how much of an impact that does. And I understand why MUFON doesn't do it anymore. It is pretty insignificant statistically. But, you know, if you get – I don't know. As these reports, if they do increase again like they did a few years ago, I think you can really start to pick out particular events that are going on state by state. I think it's important. Now, my prediction for May, write this down. I was way off a couple of months ago. I feel more confident now after this month. I think I did pretty good. So May, I'm going to go with 547 worldwide reports. I'm going to go with 359 U.S. reports. We'll see how it turns out. Now, last but not least, conspiracy theorists. I'm going to talk conspiracy theorists here. Scientific American, pretty good magazine. Now, they turned in this article here in their latest magazine. And they asked the question, are conspiracy theorists just lonely? Well, this article in Scientific American answers this question by way of a study that appeared in the March issue of the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology. Now, one experiment showed that the more excluded from others and society a person feels, the more they are searching for a purpose in life and are more likely to have suspicions surrounding conspiracy theories. Now, exclusion also enhanced feelings of conspiracy theories in a second experiment and demonstrated that feelings of exclusion created greater feelings of belief toward conspiracy theories and certain behaviors. Now, this doesn't necessarily back up the thought that believers in conspiracy theories are crazy tinfoil hat wearing people. A lot of people look at conspiracy theorists. It's just, I think they use the term nut jobs. I don't remember. The paper's senior author, psychologist Alan Coleman of Princeton University, says, quote, "People think of conspiracy theorists as these weirdos, but anybody could become entrenched in that kind of thinking if the right circumstances arise," unquote. And that's certainly true. Even historically, you know, we think of conspiracy theories nowadays as the government controlling information. The government knows about aliens, or they're controlling the weather, or they're doing dubious things with different organizations, or they're getting all of our information, or they're putting viruses in our body, or we fake the moon landings, all these things. It's usually tied to the government. And that's been a pretty fair kind of conspiracy theory theme throughout history. Those in charge know more than the common person. It's always been that way throughout history. We can go back to the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, all the way back. It was always the same thing, that people were this way. And maybe, you know, an exclusion has always been a piece of that, because people who are not in the know, people that are out in the fields and not really in the kingdom behind the walls, they kind of feel excluded. What's going on in there? come, you know, how come we don't get to hang out in there and know what's going on? But I don't know. I try to stay away from the conspiracy theory stuff because I don't know. A majority of them are wrong. Majority of them. I mean, some of them you can. There's plenty of evidence, plenty of information. I'm not gonna get to naming some of these conspiracies that are blatantly wrong, but to cause controversy. Because I know some of you guys are listening that believe in this stuff, and that's no problem with that. You can believe what you want to believe. I'm not gonna argue with that. You know, belief is a very powerful thing. It affects everybody in different ways. We're all free to believe what we want to believe. And I'll just leave it there. But a lot of these, there is enough evidence out there that points in the direction. You don't have to think that one person or one entity controls everything, because it's probably not like that. But, you know, it's interesting. You know, interesting study here, but it doesn't. Some other studies kind of peer into why people believe what they believe even more. But I think this is interesting, right on the surface level of conspiracy theorists. And that's it. I don't see anything else here. That's it. Either I forgot something, or must be the end of the show. Wow. Now I got to choose. I have a little list here, and I added a couple more. If you're not listening to the show live and you're not in the chat room, I got this new little cool thing that I do, that I throw a little picture. There I am with a tinfoil hat. Cool. Cute. I put these little outro things in there. I don't know. I kind of came up with it. Spent a lot of, I like to waste time. I waste more time than anybody I know. Especially when I'm working on a show, working on a story, I get distracted by details and I end up doing all these other little things. Well, I started doing these little, I call them like outro pictures, where I say "Don't stop believing" or "Good night" or something, and you're missing these. There's some pretty cool things. I like doing these things. So anyway, you're missing that. If you're not in the chat room, you're gonna miss this week's one, which is fitting for this weekend. Again, the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. If you don't have tickets, you can get tickets at the door. Just tell them you know me. I'll get you in. I know everybody. If you're not going to be there, you're going to miss out. You're going to miss out. I mean, this one, I think this is the first one I did. So it's not as cool. It's neat. It's different. It's cool. Anyway, if you have any information about any paranormal conference, convention, or any event involved in the anomalous field, and you want to hear about it here, as well as seeing on the website at paranewsinsider.com, let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com. And I'll do my best to get it on there. And check out the list at paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top. I got to update that. I'll do it later. I'll do it after the show. Big thanks to Cindy, my producer. I know I was 2 minutes late on the half hour, bottom of the hour there. And anyway, Dita, thank you for the tinfoil hat picture. Appreciate that. And to Paul, I see you, Paul. And Kat Hobson jumped in the fray in there in the chat room. Got to be careful. These guys are dangerous in that chat room. A lot of fun, a lot of interesting conversations. I get distracted if I start reading this stuff. But anyway, thank you everyone who's tuned in tonight, who's listened to a show. I don't care if it was show number one or show number 312. I appreciate you. And you're the reason why I continue to do this each week, every week. Even with all these things pop up on my screen from Facebook. Thank you. Now, I'll see you next week for a little bit of rehash of the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. I had to get that in there one last time. It's going to be intense. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting. Don't stop believing.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.